Early Breakfast, 7:02, This Morning.
And of course, it is a Monday. We're looking for motivation. Hey, we're looking in everywhere. I don't know where you're looking, under a tender, under a Bible, whichever religious denomination you're of. But we are in studio with Sean Naidu, who is a managing director of 33 Films and founder of Becoming Legacy. And we're going to be talking to him specifically about the challenge that comes with the filming environment. We just heard the SABC cannot pay their creatives. It's devastating. And if you watch Game of Thrones, or if you're a fan, there's nothing more powerful than a story. We saw how Tyrion's monologue was so inspiring, and I was like, actually, he's right. So, Sean, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm great. I'm great, besides the time that it is right now, a public holiday, but yeah, all good.
So let's start with who Sean Naidu is. We've an award-winning South African film and television producer, motivational speaker, and entrepreneur. That sounds like a mouthful. And you started your story off with a very important precipice. You said to me, I failed my trick.
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, I was stupid enough to do so. One of those rebellious young people that just, you know, didn't listen, didn't do the right thing in the matric year and let it collapse. And so it was tough. It was tough because I you know, when you come out of matric, you realize that you're unemployed all of a sudden. You're no longer a student. And, I started chasing, you know, something, and it was like, you know, random jobs. You know, you can't really find good work. You certainly can't build a career on anything in the way of,
Yeah, sorry to start on a downer, but it's fun. For me, one of the biggest things for parents right now, they want their best for their children.
Yes.
We're talking about legacies. We've seen a lot of the pressure on Zinzi Mandela.
Yeah.
What was the first response? And I think parents are so important. It's so key for a child's future and their mentality. When you're developing, when you feel that you failed, this could be the end. And a lot of people, unfortunately, a lot of young people are taking their lives. What would you say? What was the first response from your parents? And how did you overcome that challenge and that barrier? It can't have been an easy discussion.
It certainly wasn't. I think the bigger of the two parents, my father's disappointment was the biggest one for me that really, you know, woke me up to what I had done. The seeing the disappointment in him made me realize, because I was his only son, you know, and he had so much expectations of me. And when I messed it up, and you know, my dad's a very simple man. He was a laborer. He didn't have any way of education, you know, just really difficult life. And I think, you know, he hoped for more for me. And when I messed up my matric, he was really disappointed. And I think that was, like I say, the big wake-up call for me that I had messed this up and I need to start trying to fix it.
Was it the system or was it you? Because profoundly, we find that you're studying towards something because you want to guarantee a good future. Was it the education system in itself, or do you feel that you weren't ready, or wasn't it ready for you? Didn't it fulfill your purpose? As because what I feel is that a lot of the education that we're given is to create an employee.
Yeah.
And then you're told all of a sudden, hey, listen, chief, there's no jobs. And I think there's fundamentally something wrong in what we teach children, how we teach them, the perceptions as well. It's moved on a bit. I must give credit from teacher, lawyer, nurse.
Yeah.
For me, I remember it was CA, for example. And yes. I studied high grade accounting and high grade science. And to all due respect, with all due respect to my mother, now I'm on radio. I'm a creative. I'm in digital marketing. The closest thing my mom can say is that he works on Facebook. I do website optimization, SEO, all those kind of things.
Okay.
So do you think that we need to relook how we educate young people?
I certainly think we should. And I think, to be fair, I think they are as well. Like, you know, I think these things turn
True.
Slowly.
True.
The world that I was, when I was in high school, that was 20 odd years ago. So it was a long time. And I think the world was different back then. And 20 years on, I think there's a lot of change, and you're starting to see that because the world is sort of moving on with technology and so many jobs are being replaced by technology these days, that entrepreneurship, the creative space, these are the places that people are starting to see that's where human beings are most relevant now, you know, in things that you got to feel, you know? And I think slowly you're starting to see this creep in. We work a lot through Becoming Legacy with the schools. We go into high schools, we go into universities.
Nice.
I give these motivational talks there.
That's amazing.
And they definitely is this appetite for it, you know? I think from a departmental point of view, there'll always be that appetite, but certainly not the rollout quick enough, you know?
Okay.
But I think the the government has seen it. Mm-hmm. You know, my sister's a teacher, my mother-in-law is a teacher, and I hear from on the ground kind of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So that appetite is there. We just got to wait for the higher bodies to start rolling it out.
So Sean, you're a motivational speaker. If you were to speak to 18-year-old Sean, after the disappointment, after the failure, you've failed, you've disappointed your father, what would you say to him?
Look, what I say to all these...
No, to young, to 18-year-old Sean.
Yeah, to the students, yes. You know, it's don't waste time. You know, I always say to them that, yes, we put this label on me that I'm a motivational speaker and that sounds more fancy than it is. All I'm really trying to do is to testify to young people that haven't walked this road yet that here's how I walked it. And this is how it didn't work out for me. And this is what I had to do to fix it. But the biggest thing I show them is those 8 years after matric, those lost years. Mm. You know, when you start taking what I started doing when I became a producer and when I started in the television space, today I work in advertising. I work, you know, in the film business, those kind of career building opportunities that came, but 8 years were lost, you know, and how long it takes to catch up. You know, I'm not young anymore, you know, no matter how much I'd like to think so, I'm not. And it's lost time. So my biggest thing to young people is if you're going to learn from somebody else's mistake, because it's always tough. They don't want to learn from other people's mistake. They want to see for themselves, you know, do for themselves, learn it on their own. And I'm like, try at least see the time lost by doing that, you know, and if there are these lessons, take them. And that's all I really appeal to them to do is listen to the story. And if it resonates with you and you can understand the time, the biggest thing we lose in life is time, you know, and failing and having to pick up those pieces. And it takes a long time to pick up pieces when you fail something like matric. Cause for me, like, and a lot of, you know, the time we got to fix the story that I failed matric, I still had to go and get that certificate. So I had to register for these subjects, in a private environment, write it, you know, outside of the school system. And now I'm costing myself money. I'm costing myself extra tuitions if I need those, you know, and I got to go write these exams. And then once I got my matric, I eventually started working and eventually, I mean, today I even got a degree. But all of that came with my own money, own time, own sacrifices that I could have saved myself had I done it right the first time.
How did your dad feel after you got your matric and then your qualification?
Look, I think, you know, it's so funny that Bruno Mars song where he says, I should have gotten my college degree, but sorry, dad, you'll just have to wait. That was like words that rung in my head the whole time that I didn't have it, you know? And so I think more than even my own sort of upliftment and pushing myself, I was trying to fix those for him, you know, to show that to him. And thank God he's still alive. I mean, my dad's 81 now, you know, really frail in that. But I think thank God that he got to see it, you know? He's not really the most vocal person in the world. So he didn't say anything. So I didn't get those words, you know, like, I'm proud of you now. But I think I demonstrated that I sort of fixed what I broke.
Is TV a viable industry right now? I like the fact that you measured the whole creative aspiration and all of that, because creating is something that gives you life, basically. I told my partner once, why do you do all these things? You've got a job, you've got all, and I said, I have to create. There's something within me that really pushes me to just live beyond my boundaries and just imagine another thing. What is it that inspires you to create, and how do you manage that aspiration with reality?
You know, I think to start this answer on a sad note, you mentioned Game of Thrones earlier.
Yep.
I think one of the saddest things we as creative people living in our industry environment, like locally, South Africa, Africa, whatever you want, is the fact that we are almost not allowed to think at a Game of Thrones concept level. Like our storytellers need to tame their ideas with the realistic budgets that they will get to make them.
So you get a generation's budget and you get blockbuster expectations.
And even to that extent, if you watch the behind the scenes documentary.
To generations and other local developments.
For sure. You look, anything that's being made and made reasonably well in South Africa, you give credit to because we work in tough conditions and I have respect for anybody doing it and pulling it off, you know. But like I say, if you watch the behind the scenes of Game of Thrones, you'll see the amount of budget that went in. I think it cost them something like $15 million per episode in the last season. And the amount of, you know, sort of like innovation that goes into each shot that they're trying to achieve. Now, if you think about a writer sitting in a writer's room and just creating a little character, dragons will be here and they'll breathe fire over there. And then the production people have to figure out how to make that scene. And if you can't afford it, South African writer can't write a dragon's show. It's just not going to happen. So we got to like tame our thing. So for me, in a creative sense, I wish that we would be able to be supported more. I think the government is doing its part with the DTI funding and all of the rebates and things that we get. But we're certainly far off the, you know, the mark in being able to.
It sounds like the budget is there, but it's not being used correctly. Am I misinformed in that? It seems the idea, the why is always there. We've got budgets, we've got ideas, but fundamentally the how is where we get hit hard by, because running a company and you've got suppliers you need to pay, then you get a 3-month payment. What does that do for an entrepreneur in this kind of industry?
Look, any small business that's on terms like that is going to be difficult, you know? I think even myself, I know that from a financial management point of view, we got to sometimes take what we make in one job and stretch it over a long period of time before the next job comes in. So it's always tough. And I think, you know, the budgets, I don't know that they're there is the problem. It's so weird because I happen to have this interesting perspective that I work in both sides.
Yes.
You know, I work in advertising where you can make a 30-second commercial for 3 million rand and you can't get 3 million rand to make an entire 13-episode series at the SABC. You know, so it's a tough, tough space, you know. And I always wondered, I'm in advertising 10 years now, and I always wondered, why can we not hold each other's hands? You know, in the States, and that you see how these branded entertainment concepts help fund the things, you know? And then with the advertising guys, there's like this them and us kind of attitude, which certainly doesn't help us develop and move forward. You know?
And I feel I'm highly critical of the South African filming industry, not because of the actors, not because of the content, but the marketing is so horrible. One thing I hate is the whole idea of emotional blackmail. Listen, I'm a South African through and through, and I am affected by international and global because it's there. It's because it's amazing. It's great. And I want to support South Africa, South African film. But if you look at, for example, what is that Wakanda movie? Black Panther.
Yeah, Black Panther.
The marketing for that thing started months before. You get a South African movie, because it's got two celebrities in South Africa, drop two tweets, open up a Twitter and Facebook profile, and then they ask questions when there's no one there. 1 month of preparation.
Yeah.
Why is marketing of films and series in South Africa so horrible? And films specifically.
Look, to be honest with you, we're busy putting together a feature film as we speak, right? I mean, we're literally months away from shooting it. But it is an impossible task. To get the money that it takes to put on screen is already a hill that you have to climb. Never mind the marketing side. Now, marketing comes from various sources. It comes from your distributor people. It comes from a host of other things. Like, you know, like the other day we were at the Gauteng Film Commission and they were like, maybe we'll help you with some marketing. That's the attitude. It's an afterthought on the back end of these things. It's not part of our budget. Already we are being told to keep our budget under a certain amount because we won't make our money back. You know, so that's kind of like you're already taming the production budget of what's going to go on screen. Never mind promoting that film, you know, so we rely more heavily on all the free sources and true marketing in the way you're speaking of. It doesn't even exist.
I'm on the online aspect of things, and there's lots of free marketing that has been used optimally. But I understand what you're saying, and I'll concede to the fact that being on both sides can be tricky, can be difficult. But I'd also feel that in terms of influence, for example, let me be specific. Black Coffee and Kagiso Lediga, they have a huge following on Facebook and Twitter. Unfortunately, they tapped into this at the pinnacle, at the end of the whole production itself. You can invite people through just open, I think DJ Khaled. He just uses Snapchat.
Yeah.
We've seen local DJs using their phones, but that's another discussion. So let's talk about the awards. 2015 Cannes Film Festival in 2017. How long did it take in your journey before you got recognition?
Probably over 10 years, at least. With the Cannes film, it was literally a self-funded short film. It was us getting together and saying, we want to do this. We can do this. Let us showcase how we do it.
you know, can do it.
We can do it. There's actually a Twitter account for that. They stole it. but you know, they literally, we made that film. It got into Cannes. It was a proud moment. We did the song and dance about it. It took us another 2 years after that to make a film that Mzansi funded. And we won the SAFTA for that film, you know, in that year. So amazing. 2017. Amazing. But literally we made a film with like such a bad budget that I think the only reason they let us win that award is because they said, how did these guys make a film that looks like this that cost that? You know, if there was one criteria they gave it to us on. So yeah, it was like, you know, those were the two things that we managed to do well.
Amazing.
It did open doors, I would say. You know, we're currently in a script development deal with Mnet on another film project. So it certainly propels us forward a little bit. But yeah, man, you know, these awards, they don't come overnight and they certainly don't come in quick succession.
And that's an important lesson. And that acknowledgement and getting traction and getting marketing is an important discussion. So let's start talking. Why did you start becoming legacy? What in you said that, you know what, I think this could benefit other people?
I think when I consider the loss of time again, I always come back to the loss of time. I just said to myself, can I save a young person time? You know, if I give them the story, if I tell them, because while I am no celebrity and the industry I work in is 90% hard work and sweat and maybe 10% glamour on a good day. I realized that, you know, what we're doing, the ability to stand on red carpets, to have this kind of story, it almost doesn't belong to someone with my story. You know, like the title of my talk that I give at schools is "Are Dreams Worth Dreaming?" And I frame it from that point of departure, because when you fail your matric and you're from a township and that kind of thing, are your dreams still worth dreaming? So I try to answer that through the story, you know. And so becoming legacy was really like, we're all always becoming something. You know, even when you finish up and when I was like in high school, I thought I was going to become a police, you know, join the force.
I wanted kind to of be thing. Nelson Mandela's bodyguard.
Okay, then.
I don't know so much.
Yeah, a lot has changed. A lot has changed. But what is the response from a lot of the students? Because, you know, young children are very skeptical. And as you said, when you say motivational speaker, they switch off.
Mm-hmm. They certainly do. And I think they always, there's that murmur at the beginning, and there's always this difficulty to get them to pay attention. Mm. What I found was interesting is that as the story sort of builds, they eventually catch on, and sadly, sometimes they catch on too late.
Yeah.
They catch on to the message and they start to pay attention at the middle to latter part of what I'm saying. And then they flood us afterwards, you know, so they'll come and they'll have all these questions and they'll even ask if we can come back, you know. And, you know, I've got a little bit of a no repeats policy because there's so many schools.
Fair.
And you want to kind of go to as many of those and give, you know, we're not like this huge influencer social media account. Mm. You know, we don't have like lots of people and we're not doing it online as the big thing. We're direct, you know, we're touching the kids touching the kids. Okay. let's correct that, you know,
connecting with them.
Yeah. Connecting with the kids on a direct level, you know, in the schools. And, what's amazing for me is that I get to see them. I get to answer their questions directly. And that's really what moves us, you know, and we say we go for the one. So even when there's this huge crowd at assembly and most of them want to be disruptive,
yeah,
I still push through because there's that one.
Right.
Who wants to listen? And we always get the text. Mm. You know, they'll find us online. They'll send us that text and say, I had this one kid write back to us the day after the same morning, actually, of being at Vega. Mm. And he was like, he was ready to call it quits. And he literally said, today, that's your amazing talk, I'm staying in school.
That's amazing, man. So yeah, so there's if you've just joined in, we're speaking to a very inspiring individual. We've got Mr. Sean Naidoo, who's a managing director of 33 Films and founder of Becoming Legacy. Before we run out of time, and my own enamorment gets ahead of me, can you please tell us who would you like to work with? If there was anyone listening out there, who would you like to work with? Where can they get in touch with you and how?
When you say work with, I think
or collaborate,
if I'm being huge and like, you know, I follow Will Smith on his Instagram, and I think he's the most amazing Instagrammer out there.
Yeah.
And to just think of being able to bring his creative mind into any project would be absolutely amazing. So, but I also think that we haven't seen Charlize make a South African film yet.
Fair.
Would be amazing to be the team to bring Charlize into her first South African film, so to speak.
Amazing. And what does the future look like? Anything to look forward to? Should we keep in touch? Where can we follow the conversation?
Thanks to the structures in our country, we now have a feature film that's coming really, really soon. We are still locking down final financing for it, mm-hmm. but it's looking really good. So hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be shooting a feature film. So sometime inside of next year, you should see the release of hopefully what will be a kick-ass movie.
Is there an email address where we can get flooded by young, unexpected creatives who are aspirational, ambitious, who are trying, who are good at maths and everything academic, but they feel that, you know what, they connected with you today. Where can they get in touch with you?
Is it? I think at Becoming Legacy is our Twitter, our Facebook, that kind of thing. And then www.becominglegacy.com.
And I left
emails and all of that is there.
I left a tough cookie for you. If you can, in 60 seconds, open up the industry. I used to feel that it's a great discussion, but there's a lot of sacrifices we mentioned. There's a lot of time that's put into it. And I feel the industry in South African entertainment is one of the most open. What is your take on open up the industry? You started your own film, the first one that was successful without any funding, self-funded. What is your take on open up the industry?
Open up the industry. I must be honest. I think that we need to free it up a little bit more in terms of access to the funding. It's just, you see way too many government logos on our movies.
Oh, right.
It's like every South African film opens with a series of logos, and it's all like, you know, DTI, KZN Film Commission, Gauteng. It's just a government funded thing. Let's start seeing a little bit more of the private sector doing something for us as well.
Sean, thank you so much for your time and all the best for the future.
Thank you so much, man.
Cheers.
Take care.